Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, veterans of all ages. Welcome to another edition of Warrior Connection. Well, you know, as we've been talking, we've been having a lot of discussions about what war is, how we survive, how we get along, how we get medical care. We continue to help people each and every day. I had another real good conversation with the people at the War Injuries Clinic in Washington, D.C. today. We're trying to help another vet that we met through all of the stuff we've been doing, and we're going to continue to do this. Well, today we're going to continue with our discussions and looking at books that have been written about this. My producer, Jason Taubenfield, got a phone call or an email and set this up for us, so we have to thank Jason very much for this. And today we're going to be talking with Ruth Crocker, who wrote Those Who Remain. Ruth is a husband. He was a West Point graduate, and Ruth got married to him way back in 1966. And from there, he went on to Vietnam. And like too many individuals that we know and too many of our friends, he didn't survive Vietnam. Well, Ruth wrote an incredible book, Those Who Remain, Remembrance and Reunion After the War. Ruth, welcome to Warrior Connection.
Thank you. Thank you.
Boy, I don't even know where to begin. When I got this book and read it, and I sat down and I read it straight through in about a day and a half, and it was just like, how did you ever get involved or decide to write such a powerful book?
Well, it was a kind of process. Way back in the 90s, I didn't talk about, like many people, I didn't talk about what had happened to me. I didn't talk about my special relationship with the Vietnam War for about 30 years. And actually, by chance, my son, who is actually from my second marriage, but he knew all about Dave and the family, the Crocker family, and he knew my story. And when he was a teenager, he said to me, "Mom, you have to tell your story." And so I started with writing a play, which was fictionalized, but that wasn't very satisfying, and I realized right away that this was not enough. But I didn't, even though I had done a lot of writing, I didn't feel that I had the tools to write it at that point. But I did keep writing, and I wrote stories and little essays. And then finally, in 2006, by chance, my brother-in-law from my first marriage, Dave's brother, Tom, he was Googling Dave's name on the Internet, and all these tributes came up to saying things like, Captain Crocker was my hero. I would never have survived Vietnam without him, and endless numbers of tributes. And so Tom called me and he said, "Would you like to be in touch with these guys?" And I had never, I didn't know these guys existed, and I had never spoken to another, to another person who had had anything to do with that part of my life. And so I said yes. And when we contacted them, they immediately wanted to meet us, to be with us. And they invited us to a reunion of the 22nd Infantry Regiment Society, of which they are part, their unit. And we went out to Omaha, and it was like we had met our family, you know. They embraced us with open arms, and that really helped to bring Dave back into the world. And I think up until then, it was like I was kind of telling my story, not so much, kind of in a vacuum. You know, it was like I was thinking, well, how many people are left in the world who actually knew who Dave was and what a great guy he was? But when I met these guys and realized that, you know, they said things like, "We think of Captain Crocker every day of our lives." And it made him, you know, it brought him back to life. And then I felt like, I have to tell this story. I have to. So I just started writing parts of it. And you know, it just came, I just worked on it for years. And it came together, and I figured out how to tell it in a way that I felt could be interesting to people. That's what happened.
That's pretty neat. I mean, you know, myself, all of us, the bond we developed. I mean, I went to the Vietnam War and had my first tour, first ArcLight. I was all of 19 years old when I went over there.
Yeah.
And Denise, are you with us today?
Yes, I just joined in.
Yeah, Ruth, we've got Major Denise Nichols here. She was a nurse treating Vietnam casualties, and she remained, and she was on the front lines as a nurse running medevac during Operation Desert Storm, and she's continued on. So she has, just like you, losses for those that she took care of and losses in her family, like all of us have.
Mm.
And so, again, we got both of you here for the same perspective. I guess,
well,
you know, I mean, the bond that you found out about, that all of us developed, that we had with those people we went to war with, is just astonishing. I
yeah.
mean, Denise, you've talked about that special bond you have, and you and I have developed a special bond.
Yeah,
Ruth,
I mean, you're
a West Point bride. I mean, Dave was a West Pointer through and through. I mean, dreamed of going to West Point his entire life because his dad had been in the military.
Yeah, and his father had gone to West Point, too.
Yeah, so, I mean, how did this all come to play? I mean, back in the 60s, at this time, we're all young and full of vim and vigor and thinking we can do it and think we're indestructible. And yet that Vietnam War intervened on all of our lives. And, you know, when we got out of high school there in the middle of the end of the 60s, you know, there was a one-way trip over to Vietnam. Dave was a few years older than us, so he was already in college and all this stuff and at the West Point. But all these kids that you write about and you talk about, they were young puppies.
Yeah, yeah, 18, 17 years old. And yeah, and that's what they said about Dave, was that he was like a, even though he was only 25, he was like a father figure to them. They said they don't know how they would have survived it without him. But I think I was talking about this with Denise, you wanted to say something a minute ago. I wanted to give you a chance to speak.
I appreciate that. You know, I understand you're a Gold Star wife.
Yeah.
And how you reconnected by going to reunions. And I wanted to just make a mention early in the program that getting reunions going for the Gulf War veterans of Desert Storm seems to be...
Denise,
really,
you got
to
speak up loud.
Seems to be really hard and difficult, and even more difficult to get people to come up to D.C. when we need them. And we have an Institute of Medicine meeting coming up that I wanted to mention today on the 27th, the Institute of Medicine. And this will be the last public meeting probably before they actually do their report and report it out, which they have a public meeting at the end to give us their findings. But it is critically important. This is a way that you could have a small reunion with other Gulf War vets to get up there on the 27th and go to the National Academy of Science building at 1 p.m. This study impacts all of us Desert Storm vets because they're reviewing presumptives of illnesses that have occurred since the war.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I know you're a Gold Star wife and lost your husband during the war in Vietnam. But it's so critically important to get the word out to veterans that live through the war, that come home and are sick,
yeah.
and to be aware that these meetings are critically important. And when we get down to only four or five showing up, it really does not help us to get changes made for the tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of Gulf War vets that are sick. I have to
yeah.
compliment the Gold Star Wives. They have their meetings. They, you know, are very active. You've written a book that catalogs your husband's loss and how you came through it.
Yeah.
I've encouraged our Gulf War vets to set up blogs and talk about their struggles. This is, you know, the 21st century and how we can get our stories out there, whether you write a book, whether you write a blog. And
yeah.
And it, you know, seems like you struggled writing the book, but you got it done.
Right. You know, the thing about people coming to reunions that I've learned is that it takes, it sounds crazy, but the guys have told me that it was almost more scary to go to the reunion than it was to initially go to Vietnam, because they're afraid of reliving some of their memories, and also of just kind of being thrown back into that atmosphere. But once they get there, they realize how fabulous it is. You know, they, as soon as they walk through the door and they see that, you know, they connect with someone, it's fantastic. They feel relaxed but it's getting there. That's tough. And so they've told me that how the best way that they've achieved getting people to come to reunions is by this personal contact, that if someone knows someone else and calls them, sometimes they have to call them 10 times to get them to come, but if eventually they do, and then they call someone else. And, I mean, it's really a grassroots effort to happen, because people are afraid. They're really afraid of kind of being re-traumatized.
I think that, you know, that's part of the problems we all run into, because I know, and you wrote about it, and you probably already heard, we've used your writings on this program already before, but the Christmas times and this holiday season, Denise and all of us, we've talked about this, Ruth. I mean, what you wrote about, the impact on the holiday season for all of us is pretty bad, and that continues on to this day, so that's something you don't get away from. Can us go back to the beginning. I mean, you yourself were a young college student when you met your husband, kind of on a blind date.
Yep.
And had no idea who a West Point guy was or what they were going to do. And the next thing you know, you're an Army wife. I mean, what was that like back in the 60s?
Well, we didn't have as much communication as we have today, so it was kind of life was a little more moment by moment than it is today, I think. But that's, you know, that's the way things happen. I think that someone asked me at a book club recently, "Oh, what if, you know, do you ever regret that you didn't have a child with Dave?" And you know, you can't regret things. You can't do the what if, you know. Things were as they were, and you just have to, you know, try to understand it as best you can. And understanding your young self back there, which was also part of why I wrote the memoir, was I wanted to understand who I was and kind of why I went back into my Quaker background, because, you know, in my family at home, there was a lot of talk against the war. You know, not against the people who were serving in the military, but just against war itself as a way of solving problems. And so I was just naive and young and innocent, and so was Dave to a large extent, because even back in those days, no one understood what Vietnam really was, the enormity that was already existing before it became public knowledge, in terms of, you know, the number of troops on the ground and so forth, starting in 1965. So I think we have to be very forgiving of our young selves for getting into situations that can turn out to be less than optimum, but actually I don't regret any of my time with Dave, because I learned a lot. He was a great person, a great teacher in the way he lived his life and the way he enjoyed life, and you know, even though he was very young. So I got a great heritage from him and his family, who I stayed very, very close to. Both his parents have passed away, but I was like another daughter in their family until the end of their life. So
that's pretty neat. I mean, when you write about this, and I know Denise and I from both, and Denise from the female perspective, she had a young daughter when she went to Desert Storm. I think Denise, Jen, was what, maybe 4 years old, 3 or 4 or 5 years old when you went to Desert Storm. And so you had all this stuff, and then Denise's husband was also a colonel, like colonel, in the Air Force, so, you know, kind of like the whole thing was coming up. But I know my boys, they were young, they were in junior high when we, you know, they were born after Vietnam, right after Vietnam, but then they were in junior high when we went back to Desert Storm. and for them, that whole life cycle of knowing what's happening, where are you at, what are you doing, are you alive, where are you, what are you thinking about, are you thinking about me, just intervenes there completely.
Yeah. Yeah, I want to say something about Desert Storm, because it is it's a very important pivotal point in our history, I think. It was 1992, I think, and when I was at one of the reunions, one of the guys told me that, in fact, it's Dick Nash, who I speak about in the book. He was one of Dave's first lieutenants. He said that he when he came back from Vietnam, he just kind of tried to put it out of his mind. He didn't talk about it. And when Desert Storm came up, he had a son who was about to deploy to Desert Storm. And he said, all of a sudden, he started having nightmares and, you know, night sweats. And he didn't know what was going on with him. He didn't understand. And he said he had the wherewithal to go and, you know, seek out a counselor in the VA counselor, and realized, and it became evident that he was starting to have flashbacks about Vietnam, because suddenly this fact that his son was going into war just brought the whole thing back. And he had been very good at repressing the whole thing up until that moment. And for me, too, I hadn't really thought about this, but I was, during Desert Storm, I was teaching a nutritional anthropology course up at the University of Connecticut. And I remember standing in front of the class, and there was a young woman crying in front of me in the front row. And I asked her what was wrong, and she said, well, my boyfriend is going off to, he's leaving for Desert Storm tomorrow or something. And just those words from her brought everything back for me, too. And up until that point, I was, you know, I just like Dick, I had sort of kept everything under wraps. So I think that's something we have to be aware of in ourselves and in each other, that there's no way to really understand why we, you know, hold things very closely for a long time, but then ultimately something will trigger it. And I think Desert Storm was actually the first, operation that we had been involved with since Vietnam, if I remember correctly. Anyway, that was...
Yeah, it was one of the strange things for me. I mean, we were up at the KKMC in King Khalid Military City in northern Saudi Arabia, right outside of Iraq, and I was walking down the road, and all of a sudden I heard this guy yelling at me, Sergeant Rock, Sergeant Rock, Sergeant Rock, and I turned around, and this was an Air Force colonel, and the guy had been a brand-new second lieutenant when we served in Vietnam and flew in with the Air Force together back in the 69 through 71, and that was so strange to see somebody, you know, from that time frame again, that, you know, like, wow, you're still here and you're still alive.
Yeah.
The other thing, too, and you write about this in your book a lot, especially at the beginning of your marriage, you guys got stationed over in Germany at Grafenwehr, and one thing that both Denise and I learned, and our families had to learn, is the amount of time when you're in the military that you're involved and away from your family, even when you're home, is just immense.
Yeah.
Because you've got training, you've got everything going, so it's not like you're going to work from 7:30 to 3:30 or 8 to 5 in a day. I mean, you're working 24 hours a day, 365 days a year.
Yeah.
What was that like as a brand-new bride, knowing that Dave was more likely going to Vietnam and you weren't spending that much time together?
Well, first, you know, the whole thing about Vietnam was really kind of off to one side, and we didn't really talk about it that much. And also there was a sense at that time that somehow this was possibly going to be resolved. This, at that time, it was a conflict, not a war. And so it was there, but, you know, youth are full of hope and impervious. And so I think and in terms of going to Germany and being in this situation, I had never been a bride before. I had no even expectations of what my life was going to be like. I was just kind of amazed that I was in a foreign country, and I felt like okay, here's the situation. I have to figure out how to deal with it. I can't say that I was ecstatically happy all the time with, you know, especially learning that Dave was going to be away so much and that I was surrounded by people who, you know, I couldn't communicate with in terms of language. But you know, I just tried not to feel too sorry for myself and make the best of it.
Well, it sounded like in the book you just made it happen. So you figured out how to get housing. You figured how to get around. You're a young girl, all of what, 19 or 20 years old yourself, and
yeah.
You're figuring out how to make all this stuff happen. I mean, to me, that's just incredible.
Yeah, well, I think we have capabilities that, you know, we don't even know we have until we're into, what is that expression about, I can't remember the expression, but it'll come to me. Tea bags and hot water or something. anyway, yeah, I had great training, we can say, from growing up in my very unusual family, you know, where my parents were running two or three businesses and had a nursing home, and we had a lot of relatives who were sort of in and out of our house at different times, So I had I hadn't had much experience away from home, but I certainly had a real a lot of things going on that were good training for dealing with emergencies.
Yeah, I know. I was in more than one military wedding. When I got married, I was in a military wedding. Denise, was yours a military wedding?
No.
Okay, but I looked at the picture in here, and the best man at yours and Dave's wedding is Wesley Clark. Is that General Wesley Clark?
Yeah. He and Dave were roommates, I think almost the first 2 years that they were at West Point, so they were best friends.
Wow. I mean, that gentleman has gone on to, you know, become legendary in the U.S. military, in the history of the U.S. Army.
Yeah, and he's a great guy. He actually calls me periodically, and he called me after a West Point reunion recently and said, you know, they still talk about Dave, and he's still a very important person in their lives.
So in this story, you talk about what happened to Dave, and, you know, afterwards when you got back with all the members of his unit and they started relaying the stories, and one thing both Denise and I have fought, and, you know, we've already communicated with you a little bit with email, when we were on the command staff during Desert Storm, the information about what happened didn't get back to the families, and we've been still working on this to this day. And you experienced that, and your father-in-law, who was a full Army colonel, and he was a commander in Vietnam, from what you wrote,
yep.
He got frustrated from the fact that you guys couldn't get any straight answers, which still happens to this day.
Yeah. It was why I put his letters in as he wrote them, because he was so eloquent, and you can feel this man who he was a very generous leader, and he's trying to be generous toward these people who, you know, in a situation where he's experiencing the most devastating loss, you know, to lose his son, and it was really. That's my one regret about these reunions, is that Dave's parents didn't survive to meet these guys and go to these, because they would have been very happy to be there and be with these guys. It would be fantastic.
I know my own parents, and Denise, I think you've mentioned this before. I know when I went to Vietnam for the first time, they had a big thing. When I went to Vietnam for the second time, it was a big deal. And then when I came back, I said, hey, Mom, Dad, I've been recalled, and I'm going back to Desert Storm. I mean, this is 20 years after I went to Vietnam for the last time. And that was extraordinarily difficult for my parents and everything that. And it just, how you deal with this is so difficult for the people that are left behind. I mean, your book is Those Who Remain. So, I mean, sometimes, you know, we know what happened to the individual. We were there, but it's all of you who are behind and the family members that are, the impact is just huge on.
Yeah. Denise, I how was it for you to come back from Vietnam, having been seeing the worst of the worst over there?
Well, first of all, I was not in Vietnam. I was, you know, a nurse during that time period, but I was stateside.
Oh, okay.
I was at Wilfred Hall as it was ending. I got part of my training to be a nurse at the VA hospital in Houston, the old VA hospital. So, and I had two brothers that also served, you know, during the Vietnam period. One was at Thompson Newte in the Air Force during the Tet Offensive. One was a Marine that did not deploy over to Vietnam because my brother used the sole name Survivor and caused to keep him out of it, keep his younger brother out because he knew that he probably wouldn't come back being a Marine. But anyway, so I trained at a VA hospital along with other hospitals and then went into the military, was in during, you know, the tail end of Vietnam. And then went, after about 5 years, went to reserve duty and continued serving and volunteered for, you know, to go with Gulf War. If I'd known what I knew now, I might have changed my mind. But anyway, and married at the time with a four-year-old. And it was traumatic. It was really traumatic leaving her. A lot of the females that served in Vietnam were not married. So our war in Desert Storm, we had that change. We had more females involved all over the place into a war zone and doing all different jobs and specialty. And they had left children behind and spouses behind. So that was a big change, I think, for Desert Storm time period was more of the females involved with families. You know, that's a huge change, and even bigger change now since OIF and OEF. So it's been a big issue lately, pushing women veterans issues, not only the sexual abuse that happens in the military, sexual trauma, but also, you know, female issues from exposures and just serving in a wartime situation. I know quite a few nurses or a few females. Gulf War wrote books. There's very few, maybe two or three. And some of them came back and had to fight for custody for their children. you know, whole new aspects that had never been considered before. There's been probably OIF, OEF, I know of at least maybe three books females have written.
But you know, what's interesting about that is when I was in the process of, I had an agent who was pitching my book around to different publishers, and they were unanimous in that they said, oh, this book is really well written, but we don't want to sell a book about Vietnam. And my agent told me, sort of between the two of us, that it's also very difficult for a woman to get a book published about war. And when you look at what is out there, it's there isn't that much that is available. And if I hadn't really stuck with it and found, you know, a small independent press, I wouldn't be published today, probably.
Yeah, I think it's very hard. No, there's a, I get it ever so often, maybe quarterly, of, you know, military war history type books. And they're not normally of the huge publishers. They're normally of the independent publishers. And that's a huge problem. I mean, this is our history, one way or the other, whether it's military, veteran, the spouses, the survivors. This, it's really a shame. Maybe with the books being put on, you know, electronic format, it can change. I hope it does. There's not very much to do about our books when they come out.
Yeah. Well, I think,
you know,
also,
not like a big book tour of a fiction book or whatever that comes out.
Yeah.
And, you know, slowly there's becoming more books on Desert Storm, but it's still very small in number compared
mm-hmm.
to Vietnam. And I think that, again, it goes to the publishers willing to know that this affects a lot of people, whether they served or not. Of course, you look at, you know, the 1%, as we say, that serve their country in the military. The 1%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think with the Vietnam commemoration that started in 2012, it's supposed to go on to 2025, at least the subject of war is kind of coming out as something to talk about, you know. And I think traditionally it's been very difficult for people to tell their stories. And, I mean, I hear this, you know, from Korean War veterans and World War II veterans who didn't, you know, start talking about it until they were 90 years old. So hopefully with this kind of atmosphere of maybe more openness toward hearing the first-person accounts, because, I mean, we have a certain history about it, but the first-person accounts really make it, they are what is really real for people, like these little stories that I told of these guys in my book.
You know, I look at it and I think about the Gold Star Wives. The Blue Star Wives are those whose, you know, spouses or family members served, came home ill, injured. I think about the female vets, the male vets, and their family members. And, you know, one of the things I've done on Facebook is pushed, you know, please write a blog. Have your children write a blog.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of our children now, as Doug's children are grown, you know, and their experiences of living through this with parents that were sick or lost a member of their family, you know, we need to get the effort out there. I think of the books that even got any type of coverage on TV interviews. The one I can think of is Falcon's Cry, which was Major Donnelly's book that was written by his sister, and he is one of our F-16 pilots that served in the Gulf War, ended up testifying he had ALS after the war. He has since died. I am so glad that I got in touch with his sister, you know, by email,
mm-hmm.
and encouraged her to write the book, and they ended up getting an interview with Larry King. But, you know, it doesn't happen very often. I watch, you know, The Daily Show that has, you know, new books that come out, and they report it. C-SPAN with their book fairs. They don't seem to even look at those books and think about giving them some coverage from the point of view of history.
Yeah, it's. I was very thankful to be invited onto this program because it is kind of unusual to be for people to be. There is a certain group that's interested, but it's kind of hard to make your way there. You know,
I think it's know, identifying all this stuff, because what we have found over times, and Denise and I and all these other, we've been working on it for so many years. I mean, we went from a point of view where we were a participant to where we were on the command staff,
mm-hmm.
and now we have to ensure that people are taken care of today. At the same time, we see the commanders that are responsible kind of advocate in responsibility. One thing that's neat about your book and neat about the other thing that I've read about you, you talk a lot about healing and how writing the book or talking to these individuals or the other members of Dave Unison, when they talk about Dave and the stuff that happened, the healing that takes place. Can you describe that a little bit more for us?
I think that I think it's, you know, in the conversations that I've had with the guys and hearing these stories, it's like I said before that it brought Dave back as a real person. And, you know, there's some new research on grief and healing these days that says it's okay to talk about if you've lost someone very close to you, that it's okay to talk to them. It's okay to think about them, and you know, it's okay to write a letter to them. And I think what that does is, and with talking with these guys, is it made Dave real again. And I was, you also have to be kind of have enough time between, you know, the present and that event that you can handle that too. I think sometimes, I mean, when you're really in the kind of raw stage for a while after the event happens, it's difficult and you're trying to figure out how to manage. But enough time had gone by for me that I was ready to hear. I was ready to hear stories and to talk about it and to talk about my experience. And it's, you know, sometimes the guys will ask me, is this okay? Can we tell you this? It's so wonderful. And you know, I say, sure, tell me everything. I really want to know. And that's a very different position for me than way back when it first happened. And I wrote about in the book that, you know, Dave's father wanted to hear these first-person accounts. And I was so, you know, I was so stricken with grief that I didn't want, I mean, I felt like, well, what good is it going to do me to hear anymore? I didn't want to hear anymore. So it does take time to get to that place where you're open and receptive, and it will happen. It will, you just have to have faith and, you know, that your body is constantly healing, and a time will come when you can deal with it.
You wrote about in the book here in some chapters, you know, recollections and reflections and everything, where when you talk to the individuals, it was almost as if it had happened yesterday for them. Is that common, or did you find that to be common as you start to meet all these individuals and get it? I mean, you're on the outside. For us, Denise and I, what happened in Desert Storm in Vietnam for us is like it happened yesterday.
Yeah,
but you're at a different point. How was that, or what happened there, or how did that come about?
Well, when they're telling me the stories, it is, they tell the stories as if it had just happened, because you know, for the, I think it's because these things are like a movie in our brain that is imprinted because of a lot of very strong, you know, sensory experiences that surrounded the event. And so when they would launch into a description of something, of some event, it was as if it had just happened. And the details, I had one of the guys called me up not too long ago, and he was a captain with in Dave's, he was an intelligence officer, and I think I wrote about him in the book too. But he called me up because he had suddenly remembered something, and to imagine that he had suddenly remembered this, it was pretty amazing, because he described it in this vivid detail. And I said, "Wow, Ken, that's incredible! That, you know, this." How much you have remembered of this. And he said, yeah. And he said, you know, something happened to me the other day, and it just triggered this memory. And it was an event that involved Dave. And so I think that's kind of a natural phenomenon, to feel like it just happened, because it's printed very strongly. And I've been doing some writing workshops with people, trying to encourage people to write their story. And one of the things that we call that kind of memory a hot spot, you know, in our remembering of things. And I always tell people the best thing to do is just write down as many details as you can, as quickly as you can, and then let it sit, and then go back and you start unpacking it, you know, because sometimes the first swipe through it will be more general, but then if you go back and go into each sentence, you will start to remember more parts of that event.
Yeah, I think one thing, again, that's happened for me, and I know Denise has happened to her, and it's happened with us both together, with the change in technology today and our involvement, we've had to go on camera, and we've done interviews and, you know, obviously book for book chapters. But I had a television crew that came here last week again for an interview on looking at the health and environmental effects of war, what Denise and I have been working on for years. And as we went through it, they had done their homework, so they had all the documentation. And what they were looking for is just verification of the documentation, verification of the events. So for me, as I brought that up, I mean, we're having the discussion. You know, we did the work before they came. Then we had a sat and talked for probably 2 or 3 hours before we actually went into the on-camera interview. But at the end of the day, it was just emotionally and physiologically totally draining.
Yeah, it is. It is that. But it's also it's exhilarating too, when you feel that what you're talking about is something that might help someone else, you know, to make a step forward in the healing process. And I've had that experience with some veterans who've read the book and just called me out of the blue, who I don't, you know, guys that I don't know who didn't have anything to do with Dave's unit, and say, I feel like you're telling my story. And that seems so interesting to me because I'm telling, you know, this young girl's story, basically. Well, my story isn't a, you know, older person, too, but it really helps to get the story out there, and you never know who's going to connect with it.
You know, we got about 10 minutes left here. Ruth, can you very slowly tell people the name of the book and how they can obtain a copy of the book and everything for us, please? Just go slowly so that they can hear about it, and then you and I have the information, and we'll put it up on the archives. But I'd like people to be able to find out about the book, how do they obtain the book, and, you know, everything.
Okay. Yeah, the name of the book is Those Who Remain, Remembrance and Reunion After War. And you can go to my website, which is just my name, www.ruthcrocker.com, and you can order it either from the website or there's a button. You can order it from Amazon. You can also go to your local bookstore and order it. It's available everywhere. It's not always in the bookstore physically, but they can order it from the distributor. Probably the best thing is go to my website, and also you can people can contact me through the website, or you can send me an email directly at ruthwcrocker@gmail.com. I'm on Facebook, and I'm doing workshops in various places. I have one coming up in Englewood, Florida, actually on January 26th, and that information is on my Facebook page, and it's will be on my website also. And I'd love to hear from anyone who wants to talk about the book or writing or Vietnam or whatever.
What do you do today? Are you a university professor, or you were a university professor, or what?
I was. I taught, I taught nutrition for
really?
A while, and I've worked as a therapist. My PhD is actually in nutrition, but then I went back and got another degree in writing, and that was kind of helped me in the process of writing my book. So now, these days, I'm a writing consultant, and I do workshops on the writing process, and I'm a writer in residence at the Riverlight Wellness Center in Stonington where I give classes periodically and workshops.
Where did you do your PhD in nutrition? I was in the University of Illinois in the Department of Food Science and Human Nutrition at the U of I. That's where I spent my time, and I retired out of. So this is weird.
Yeah. I was at the College of Nutrition and Agriculture at University of Connecticut, and I did my PhD in nutrition and human development. My research actually was in childhood obesity and the factors in families that either help or hinder kids to deal with childhood obesity. So.
Yeah, I had a directed master's at the University of Illinois in food science. What we were looking at is what do nutritionists and food scientists need to know about safety and lab operations. In other words, all the vocational components of nutritional science education. That's
mm-hmm.
what I did my master's in. It was
interesting.
Very different. That, you know, that's many, many years ago, but wow.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much that can be talked about in your book. I mean, when I went through and I read this thing, and again, like you said, it touches everybody, and it touched me completely because there's parts in there where I could relate and go, yeah, hey, we're all John Wayne and Rambo. I mean, Denise, I can guarantee you, Denise was John Wayne and Rambo, the female variety, and still is. You know, even though, you know, at our age now, we're, yeah, retirement age, we can't do that anymore.
Yeah, we have to live vicariously.
It is just so different. I mean, these young kids, they were all young kids. Your husband, again, you know, he was company commander. He's all at 25 years old when this was taking place. All of us that were like at that time, we're back 18, 19, 20 years old. I mean, you know, 25 was an old man at that time in the military.
Yeah.
And then, but yeah, Desert Storm, I know both Denise and I went because we're all about the same age. Denise and I were in our 40s. We went to Desert Storm, and so we'd both come in, and then we'd got out, and we came back in, and so here we're going back to war and coming back 20 years after over 20 years after we first came in. And that was just so strange at that time, and it still is.
Yeah, certainly is.
Did you, with David and everything, as you learned and became a military wife, how did that all change your life and your perspective, especially during Vietnam? I mean, you lost him there in May of 1969, and then what happened from there? Did you separate from the military? Obviously, your in-laws were still in.
Well,
but
how
did that work, or what happened? Did it just like a whole end of your life ended there when you're all of, what, 22 years old?
Yeah. Actually, it's true. I really did separate totally from the military. I didn't feel that. Well, I hadn't finished college. I had only 2 years of college, and I just felt like I had to go on my own and make some kind of life for myself. And so I went back to school, and I got a bachelor's degree, actually, in nutrition at University of Connecticut. And then I went directly from there in 72 to Boston because I had gotten an internship in dietetics and combined with a master's program. But I moved into a house with a big group of people, and no one knew what my story was because at the time it was still too difficult to talk about it. But amazingly enough, that group of people I lived with for about 5 years, and we have reunions still with that group. And just recently I found out what was happening to the guys who lived in our house, and that I had no idea whether they had been to Vietnam, or we never talked about it. So today we are talking about it, and I learned that all of them actually had been, none of them had been in the military. They all had deferments or, you know, some other situation where they didn't go, and kind of amazing. So there was a long quiet period, you know, after, but I was busy doing things and feel like my life is very, very fulfilled. I really enjoy what I'm doing right now with writing. we do what we do.
That's pretty neat. I mean, one thing we've talked about, and Denise has been probably one of the strongest advocates on this in the military, and you can understand this, or maybe you can give some advice as a nutritionist. One thing that we learn, especially with all the combat injuries we have, whether it's toxic exposures or wounds and everything from bullets and bombs, is that your diet and your nutrition is absolutely crucial and critical for maintaining a normal life and going on, because one of the problems we ran into, especially Vietnam and Desert Storm and everybody else, they got all the vets came back with all these problems, and then they go back and rely on alcohol or street drugs or something else, or they're misusing their medications, and all this stuff just seems to turn into a turmoil. And one thing that we've learned, and Denise and I have been working on, and maybe you can help us with this, maybe we found a resource here, is the nutrition is crucial as far as maintaining stability and maintaining optimist performance in your body. I mean, do you understand what I'm getting to?
Oh, yeah, sure. I actually wrote an article about that, about nutrition and stress, for TAPS magazine last year or the year before. It's very important because the body has increased demands for certain nutrients. And then if you're taking medication, you've got to be concerned about, you know, diet-drug interaction. And then if you're getting into recreational drugs and alcohol, there's this whole, you know, where people really deny themselves in terms of proper nutrition. So it's extremely important. And it's also an attitude about yourself. And, you know, the idea of how you're nurturing yourself physically, emotionally, is it's something that people have to embrace. I mean, in a way, it's, you have to take almost an Eastern philosophy perspective on it, you know, that you are, your body is a vessel, you are important, and this is what you need to take care of yourself.
I like how this is all coming together. I mean, discussions we've had on this radio program before and personal ones, the whole concept of meditation and the whole concept of diet, nutrition is just totally crucial for this whole thing.
Yeah, it absolutely is.
I know for our own self, pain management is crucial with the weather functions and again, what's happening in the diet. I mean, I ate some food yesterday. It was absolutely incredible, but I knew I shouldn't have it with my meds, and, well, I paid the price overnight, and that's something we see on an ongoing basis.
Yeah, and especially, I mean, with people getting older, the combination, too, of having prior stresses on the body and then just the kind of normal things that happen with aging, that's kind of a double whammy there. Too, for people. So I actually still do a bit of, I worked at both Mass General and Children's Hospital, you know, as in doing clinical nutrition. So I still have my knowledge.
Wow.
But, and it's been really great to, that issue has come up actually in some of my conversations with even some veterans, you know, people taking Coumadin, there are very important guidelines in terms of what you should and shouldn't eat if you're taking Coumadin, if you want it to work effectively, you know. It's very interesting to me, the whole
Denise is the one who did the work on all of this hypercoagulation, which requires the use of Coumadin and everything else, so all of a sudden, you guys have just tapped right together, and we're running out of time again. Wow.
Yeah, Denise, how can I be in touch with you?
Well, I'm on Facebook, so that's probably the best way, is just plug in my name, and let's friend each other and continue our conversation. It's Denise Nichols.
Okay.
And, we have a lot of other areas we can talk about, and maybe we need to do another show, Doug, with her and talk about those areas.
Ruth, would you be amenable to coming back again another time, and we can plan this ahead of time to talk about nutrition and all this?
Yeah, sure. I would love that. That would be great.
Well, it'd be fantastic. Again, I want to get everybody a review. We got a couple minutes left here before the music comes up. The book is Those Who Remain, Remembrance and Reunion After the War. It was written by Ruth Crocker, and it's www.ruthcrocker.com. Again, it was published by Elm Grove, and it's a fairly new book. I mean, 2014. When did it come out? Last year sometime?
Actually, it was released on the day that the anniversary of the day that my husband was killed in Vietnam, May 17th.
Of 1969.
It was released this year, 2014, but on that day that he was killed in 69.
Yeah, May of 1969, I was supporting flying B-52s out of Anderson Air Force Base, Guam, and we actually had a B-52 that I'd just gotten off of, and it took off and it blew up over Paddy Point on its way for a bombing raid over Vietnam. And to this day, that time frame hit. So when you came down in May of 69, my own memories went right back to that time and what had happened that day, having my friends, you know, getting blown up right in front of our face and then us getting knocked down the runway.
Doug, before we sign off for the day, since we're running out of time, I just want to remind all the Gulf War veterans, please, January 27th, National Academy of Science, Institute of Medicine, meeting in the afternoon from like 1 o'clock till 4:30 or so, on the presumptives on our next formal report that the VA has contracted the IOM to do on presumptives. They're looking at cancers, neurological issues. We need to bring every issue to the paper, to the table. This is the second and probably last public meeting we will have for you to speak out as veterans or spouses, to speak out if your husband or spouse had a heart attack or stroke, neurological problems, cancers. Any condition needs to be brought up because they will look into it. This is how we get presumptives added. The VA contracts the work out to the National Academy of Science Institute of Medicine to review all the scientific medical literature and come forward with recommendations of whether it could be connected or not for the Secretary of the VA to review. It is a critically important meeting, people, and we need our Gulf War vets that are sick or their spouses to attend and speak up.
Denise, that information is up on your Facebook page so people can get in contact and participate?
Yeah, I'll post another agenda up on my Facebook page.
Yeah, I'll try to get the word out to the groups that I'm involved with, too, because there may be some ancillary groups that are directly involved.
Ruth, thank you very much. And Jason, if you're listening, I know we were emailing and talked earlier today. Thank you for setting this all up. Ruth, thank God that you and your colleague contacted Progressive Radio Network to let us know about this and get us set up. I mean, what a contribution. Thank you very much. Denise, thank you again for everything you've done for us.
Well,
so I guess we're just about out of time, ladies and gentlemen. Have a good evening, and God bless America. Thank you, Ruth.
Thank you.